Hey, folks, welcome back to KNACO. Chris here, live in central Pennsylvania with my co-host, Dumo Denga. It's been donkey years. My goodness, Dumo, how you doing, brother?
I am doing well, Chris. It's been a while. Good to be back. I'm going to try be on here a bit more regularly. But yeah, man, it's I'm just itching to have a good discussion today.
Yeah, me as well. And maybe we can talk a little bit more around Africa, not just South Africa today, because the idea is to talk about African issues as well. But Dumo has been out of the net for a while. I don't think he's been on air for about 3 or 4 months, if I'm not mistaken. And we haven't done a KNACO in that time because of other things. And by the way, we can only always count on Dumo to show up for KNACO. Coquetso gave me some lame excuse. He's in Cairo or something like that. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if he got on the wrong plane or maybe a Polish racism wouldn't let him into Poland. I don't know what's going on. But Coquetso's not here, and our other participants aren't here either, but we can always count on Dumo coming in. Of course, Dumo, you should know from Man Patriot podcast. To those who don't know it, the link is below the video. You can check it out. I highly recommend it. Now, did Man Patriot also take a hiatus while you were away from the mic?
Yeah, we actually did. I'm just fixing up the website. So if you go visit my website now, you won't, I think it'll say the link is dead, but I'm just fixing it up. I actually got some new content that I want to put up. It has been taking a break. But we will be back definitely.
All right, we're definitely looking forward to that. In fact, you know, I'm glad Mzansi Patriot, who met me at Isan Lawana Battlefield, turns out he's a doc. We don't want to tell anybody that he's a doc who treats people in the local area there. Mzansi Patriot, I haven't seen in donkey years. And now that I've got Dumo back in the program, there he is. He wanted to know what was happening to it. So obviously there was a brief hiatus there, but it'll be back up shortly. So Man Patriot has not gone away, folks. Just Dumo has not been available. He's had some other things going on. He hasn't been able to deal with it. I understand that he was being groomed to be the successor for Cyril Ramaphosa, but it's all fallen apart. So, but I'm sorry about that, man. I'm sorry to hear that. I was excited.
I was this close.
This right? close. This but close. For the grace of God, there I was at 30,000 feet inverted, flying upside down without a parachute. Anyway, right. But Dumo, hey, let's, so how are you doing? It's like I said, it's been a few months since we chatted. We've barely even chatted on WhatsApp. I know you were busy and I didn't press you because I had other things going on as well, but how are you? Is life well? You doing okay?
Yeah, life is well. Work is good as well. It's very busy. But I'm happy. It's you know, it's better than doing nothing. Cause I mean, I only just like knocked off like now, like 7:45. I was just finishing some urgent stuff, but I mean, but it was great. Cause you know what kills me, right? Like when you work from home, the motivation to work, like for me, usually kicks in like late in the afternoon, and then there's stuff that I have to do, and I start doing that like in the evening, and then now you're like, oh, I have to, and I'm like, oh, I got a show at 8:00, and I'm like, yo, but I'm really loving the flow that I'm having right now. I wish I could just have that like at 8:00 in the morning, but it doesn't. It just decides to wake up, there. And then when it wakes up, you might as well just do it. So
and that's the thing, you know, and that's one thing. But now for me, because, you know, as covering things as a journalist around the world, I mean, it's not just that where things, you know, the ideas that they kick in for something clever or interesting or insightful at an odd hour, and you just got to get it done so you don't lose it. You want to knock it out. You want to accomplish something. For me, it's also crap happens at odd hours, so I got to get moving and do stuff. But I'm with you on that. First thing in the morning, what I do ever since I started pursuing this after retiring from the Army is I start going through headlines and looking to see what's going on in the world, all around the world. And then that helps me get into that, okay, now let's get moving sort of thing. So I've got that kind of artificial helper there. But last night I missed a phone call from someone that was important. And at 1:52 in the morning, I sent a text message responding to the person. He's like, what are you doing responding to my text at 1:52? You should be asleep. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what my work schedule is like. I mean, some days I'm up at 1:00 in the morning, at 3:00 in the morning, live broadcasting or doing interviews, just because people live in New Zealand and I can't expect them to be up at 1:00 in the morning to give me interviews. So I got, anyway, but yeah, it's the world we live in. So, I mean, when you work from home, just doesn't mean you don't work, but you got to find that motivation. So Listen, let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on here. I don't know if you're keeping track, America, since we last spoke. Donald Trump has been indicted twice. He's been indicted in New York for non-existent crimes. He's been indicted in Florida for crimes that Joe Biden has committed, Mike Pence has committed, Hillary Clinton has committed. But Donald Trump apparently is the one we have to worry about. So anyway, that's going on. Hunter Biden has taken a guilty plea and he got a pat on the back and, you know, a lollipop and no jail time for defrauding the American taxpayer of $1.2 million in two tax years. Jeepers. And also for illegal possession of a firearm, despite being a convicted felon. Anyway, so but he's getting a pat on the back. Contrast that with Paul Manafort, whose life was drugged through the coals and sent to federal prison for a couple of years until Trump pardoned him. It's two systems of justice. In South Africa, of course, we have the evil Polish people who are nothing but racist by denying black people access to Poland. I guess when Ramaphosa got off the plane with his entourage and personal security detail, they must have bleached their skin because they were no longer black because they were let in the country. But the rest of them, it's just racist anyway. So, all right, lots of fertile ground to dig into. If you got any topics, any of those are something you want to go, we can talk about right off the bat.
Right. Okay. I want to start off with the Hunter Biden and Trump situation. So Hunter Biden, I mean, it's quite clear that I think, in my opinion, that Joe Biden did speak to some prosecutors or some judges and said, look, man, you know, don't send him to jail. You know, my son's really going through some stuff and everything like that. Come on, you know.
Oh, man, Dumo, I haven't even made that claim. That's conspiracy, man. I didn't even go there that Joe would interfere. I mean, I just figured they did it for the big guy.
I mean, it's quite obvious. It's quite obvious. I think if anyone had to convict Hunter Biden, I mean, one could say it might have political ramifications, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's say he does get convicted, right? What happens? Well, that vindicates Trump. That vindicates the whole 2020 election. And then people are going to say, well, I mean, if the judges are putting this guy in jail and convicting him, I don't know if YouTube, will take this down, but I'm going to try to say this in a...
Don't talk about the choosing of 2020 and we'll be okay.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, you know, other topics relating to that Hunter Biden issue, Hunter Biden's laptop issue will come up and people are going to start questioning it again. So say that, look, he takes a guilty plea and we just, as you said, pat him on the back, leave it alone. You know, Joe Biden is kind of safe. So I think that's really what happened behind it. Not to say that the president himself interfered, but I think that was hanging in the air. Like, people are asking, really, if we put this guy in jail, how will it look? And the reality is that, look, I mean, judges, I mean, they are human beings, you know, they don't want to put their head on the stake. So might as well just, give him a light sentence or, a slap on the wrist, rather.
No, it's definitely a slap on the wrist. And it's interesting because this is an investigation that has been ongoing at a glacial pace for 5 years. The Justice Department started the investigation in 2018 under the Trump administration, and only now are they pursuing a guilty plea. So it raises all sorts of questions about why this was never addressed sooner, why the charges, why no guilty plea sooner. This guy is just a nasty human being, just like his father is a piece of work. But, you know, it's you contrast that, you know, like with judges, you know, how would it affect the election? Well, how would it affect the election if the New York District Attorney, for Manhattan District Attorney, takes non-existent state crimes that are actually federal misdemeanors that have expired the statute of limitations by 4 and 5 years, so they're not even crimes under the law, takes federal misdemeanors, bootstraps them together to make a claim that it was an attempt at a felony defrauding of people in New York for crimes that don't exist, and then indicts the former president of the United States. What does that do to our national reputation and for the rule of law? That's the first one. Before we can get to the classified documents, that's because you and I haven't talked. Well, the Alvin Bragg indictment in New York has no legal merit whatsoever. You don't need to be an attorney to figure that out.
Agreed. I mean, the Trump situation, it's so interesting. I'm surprised that, that they're really going after Trump now that it looks like that he's running for the presidency within the Republican Party. I don't know. It seems like they're threatened by him. you know? And then now that also raises more suspicions, right? Like, you know, this guy lost in 2020. Why be afraid of someone who lost in 2020, right?
Yeah, exactly. You already beat him once. What's the big deal? Beat him fair and square again.
Exactly. Exactly. There we go, right?
Which then raises questions about the last time.
Exactly. There we go. That's the thing. So it really goes back to the topic that we can't talk about.
Exactly.
But I think that's the reality. I think they're probably scared he might get a good resurgence. Look, I don't know. I mean, you know, 2016, you know, Trump was like a breath of fresh air, right? Mm-hmm. Now he's not the president. Now it's like, yeah, we had him before. I think people are going to want someone new. Maybe they're tired of Joe Biden. But the reality is that going back to the indictment, I really think that it's quite clear that, you know, Trump won't serve any time for this. This is just a smear campaign tactic that the Democrats are going to use. Should Trump win the primaries with the Republicans. So I think if he wins that, then they're going to try use that as propaganda to say, oh, but he's got these charges against him. You can't put people like that in power.
Well, not charges. So, I can already tell you the adverts, the criminally indicted. That's what they're going to say. That's what they go with.
Yes.
Because the impeach didn't work. He was never impeached. Twice he defeated impeachment, so they couldn't go with that. They tried the twice impeach, and it polled at about 3%, so it didn't work. But the criminally indicted, that's damning sort of allegation. Yeah, so the New York one's going to go nowhere. So then they've got this situation in which all kinds of contortions are going on here left and right. Trump is his own worst enemy, though. He's got a big mouth, and his big mouth has got him in trouble here because there's a recording, apparently, of him bragging to a publisher and a journalist that, listen, you know, because what was saying is that Milley lied in the press and said that Trump tried to start a war with Iran, when he says, no, that guy brought me a war plan. And I said, no, I mean, look at this. And now what I said before Trump responded a couple of days ago, and I said when I heard about the recording, is that, listen, this is Donald Trump. Do you honestly think he actually had that stuff in his hands? He's probably just running off at the mouth going, look, this is a secret. I can't tell you about it. I couldn't declassify this, but now I can't tell you about the plan, because he knows he can't tell him about the plan because he knows it's classified. So he's protecting the classified information while he's running off at the mouth, boasting about what he had. Oh, so that's classic Donald Trump. And so now he says that I didn't actually have the classified documents. You have no evidence of that. I was just waving newspaper clippings in front of them. And I believe 100% that that's a true statement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And you know, now talking about propaganda, I mean, the Democrats, or again, assuming that he wins the primaries, they're going to use that against him, and they're going to play that clip in their adverts and say, look, I mean, this person brags about classified documents and reveals what's in the, well, reveals the contents of those documents when he's not supposed to. And then they play the clip afterwards and they say, do you want a president like that? A president that can't keep a secret or something along those lines?
Well, especially if they go back to his 2016 when he said, you know, against Hillary Clinton, that he would ensure that our nation's secrets are protected. He railed against Hillary Clinton. So all of that plays very well into the echo chamber of the people on the political left who are going to not vote for Trump anyway. But it also probably siphons some independent voters away who are trying to be fair because they don't have the full story. And in this day and age, you don't need the whole story. You just need what the media is spoon feeding it, which is garbage.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of it is garbage. I mean, I mean, I haven't been watching a lot of CNN lately, but
nobody has, brother. Not even in airports. They're turning the TVs off in airports with CNN now. They like, put the travel channel on.
No, and it's funny because sometimes when I go to gym and I'm cycling and then CNN's on and I want to just tell someone, hey, can't you just change the channel, please? At least put on Cartoon Network or something, but not CNN. Oh, my word.
Yeah.
I mean, you just see these the tickers at the bottom, you know, Trump this, Trump that. Or when Joe Biden says something really stupid, they will just pretend it didn't happen, you know?
Well, I mean, like for instance, God Save the Queen. Hey, Joe, the Queen's dead. one that came right before that. I'm gonna build a railroad from Pacific Ocean to China. What the hell, dude? Do you have the pylons to go 3 kilometers below the ocean surface to put that railroad in? Oh my God. Oh my God. This guy is just, you know, wackadoodle, you know, and they just constantly excuse it. Like when the member of Congress who was killed and, you know, she died in an accident or something like that, you know, as Stacey here, dude, you just sent condolences to her family 3 days ago and, you know, and said a prayer for her because of her passing. Oh, it's just, look, it's beyond embarrassing, but let's take a contrast this very quickly with Joe Biden. Now, I know personally from my colleague who does a radio program with me, who was part of the White House communications team when Biden was vice president and he was on the Biden detail. So every day his life was Joe Biden. And on the weekends, they would travel on the Acela train, Amtrak, up to Delaware. Joe Biden would pull out of his folio, his briefcase, classified documents on a public train. Top secret sense compartment information and start reading it. Look at photographs of battle plans and things for Afghanistan and, you know, Iran.
Wow.
And his military staff members would say, excuse me, Mr. Vice President, you can't have that on the train. It's classified. You can only have that in a classified space. Number one, he doesn't have courier orders. In order to transport classified information physically, you must have courier orders. He didn't have courier orders.
Yeah.
Number two, you can't just read it in an open place like that on a train. And just was Joe Biden's response. Oh, these are my people here. There's no danger here. So Joe Biden has a disdain for classified information. He's exposed, and this is a story that the press doesn't cover. But it's a matter of fact. It's true. This is a true story. Nobody in the press has ever reported this except me and my colleague. And he's not the only one. Others know about this. He did this all the time, the entire time he's vice president. Who knows? He probably went to Starbucks as a senator and left top secret documents sitting in Starbucks, for all I know. But so that's one thing. Then we know that Joe Biden stole top secret Census Department information documents from the government when he was a senator and as vice president and left it in a think tank in an unsecure public building known to be frequented by Chinese spies by the counterintelligence experts. Yes. And he kept them in a box next to his Corvette in a garage in Delaware. Look, Donald Trump, he shouldn't have classified documents. We can have this debate about whether they're classified or not, right, the harm they've caused, but you know, they keep trying. Thousands of the people saw them. Nobody saw them. They were sitting in a broom closet in the bathroom. Nobody went in that bath. Come on. This is ridiculous. Anyway, so, but contrast it with Biden, who stole documents over a decade that we're aware of and left them all over the place like breadcrumbs. No raid, no indictment, no investigation. Well, they claim there's an investigation, but we don't even know who special counsel is. It's ridiculous. It's rules for thee, not for me.
And there we go. There we go. And I think that's going to be pretty much it. I'm wondering, why didn't Donald Trump do this in 2020? He should have done that. He really should have actually hit Joe Biden hard on that one about the classified information and so forth.
Well, he didn't know about
it. I think
he didn't know about that in 2020. Oh. That was the thing. This only came to light around the time that they were getting ready to raid Donald Trump. And I forget why it came out, but I think a whistleblower kind of put it out there because they were covering it up. Trump didn't know about it. But it begs the question, why didn't Trump pursue espionage charges under the Espionage Act against Hillary Clinton for 33,000 emails for ignoring the subpoena from the House of Representatives when she wiped the hard drives? That's a criminal act. That could be prosecuted under federal law. Now the statute of limitations is probably expired because it's been so long ago, but I don't know that there's a statute on. I have to look and see. But the point is that why wasn't she pursued? Probably because, it'll look like, getting even sort of thing, and it's a bad optics. But it's the same question I have with Trump. Why didn't the federal government intervene when the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone was declared in Seattle? They declared their own republic within the confines of the United States. That is, by definition, let's see, what's the word? Insurrection. But the federal government did nothing. A federal courthouse was attacked. They cordoned it off and they occupied it. And instead we get people who walk into a building on January 6th being called insurrectionists. It's ludicrous. Anyway.
and that's the thing about the Democrats, right? Whatever misstep is made by Republican, they really take it to its full limit. And the Republicans don't do that. And
even if it's not a misstep, even things that are lawful, for instance, sorry to interrupt you, but even if it's lawful, when George Bush won in 2004, a member of the House of Representatives from Ohio, and I think it was Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, one of the two of them, one of the senators from California, they opposed the certification of Ohio's electoral votes. on the fraudulent claim that there was some shenanigans going on when Bush had won Ohio by like 9 points or something like that. It wasn't even close. Right. So they both. And so the certification was delayed while the House and Senate debated the topic of Ohio's electoral votes in 2004. When George Bush won in 2000, they did the same thing. They contested the Electoral College. In 2016, when Donald Trump won, the Democrats didn't get to have this hearing. In 2000, they didn't have a hearing because there wasn't anybody in the Senate. In 2016, there was a House member, but nobody in the Senate. So you have to have somebody in both bodies in order to have the deliberations. In 2004, they had deliberations. They didn't have it in 2000. They didn't have it in 2016, but they did protest it, and they did try to stop the certification. When Josh Hawley steps up in the Senate and a member of the Republican caucus in the House does it, this is an insurrection. This is lawlessness. They're violating the Constitution. No, they're not. That's how the Constitution's written. But the media just runs breathlessly like the Republicans are out of control when they're simply following the law. So it doesn't matter if Republicans misstep. When they follow the law, I mean, look, if you follow science and believe in two sexes, you're homophobe. If you don't use Z and Zer and Zem and Zepper, Zipper, Zipper, you are a criminal. Give me a break.
Right.
Sorry, I got carried away there.
No, but that's a good point. I think it just goes back, like, you know, when the Republicans make a misstep and even follow the law, the Democrats will take it really far.
And they have the press backing them. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yes. And I just think the Republicans must do the same. They must do the same, because really it's the reality is that, as you said, it's not about the truth, right? It's about what the media spews in front of people.
It's the narrative.
And if the Republicans... It's the narrative. So if the Republicans can change the narrative, then, you know, do it. Do it. Why not? But
well, I mean,
it just seems like they're too polite, in my opinion.
When the Dobbs decision was handed down last year, the first thing we heard was absolutely ludicrous. But they got away with this. This is the narrative. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Abortion is illegal. False. Abortion remained legal in every jurisdiction in the United States until some legislature in a state and a governor took action. So abortion was not illegal. That's a lie. It remains legal in many places. That's the first thing. Second, oh, this is the end of interracial marriage. No, the Loving versus Virginia decision of 1966 said that that's unconstitutional. So it's not the end of interracial marriage. And by the way, Clarence Thomas is married to a white woman. He's a black guy. So I think he probably would vote against banning interracial marriage since he's in one. You know, I'm just, you know, it just, come on. And then it's like, oh, this is the end of contraceptives. What do contraceptives have to do with the Dobbs decision? And all the Dobbs decision did was simply say that the Warren Court overstepped in 1971 with the Roe versus Wade, because the federal government doesn't have the authority to oversee legislation and laws on abortion. That is a power not enumerated in the Constitution. It falls to the individual states, as the Constitution says under Article 10 or the 10th Amendment. That's what the Constitution says. So that's all it did. But no gay marriage. No, that was the next one. No gay marriage. No, yeah. no contraception. No interracial marriage. No abortion. It's all lies. And the Republicans, they sat back and said nothing. And I'm the only person. Hey, wait a second. This is untrue. None of that's changed. These people are wackadoodles. They're trying to sell you a bill of goods. Talk about snake oil salesmen. Here they are. This is ridiculous. And here we are a year later, and abortion is still legal in every jurisdiction in America, despite the media, including the Wall Street Journal, running articles. Here's where abortion is illegal. No, it's not. It's restricted to the mother's life in jeopardy and to incest and rape in certain states. But in the vast majority of the country, anybody can still murder a child in the womb with impunity. Did I say that out loud?
There you go. And I mean, I even on my Twitter as well, I mean, when the Roe v. Wade decision came in, a lot of these left-wing blue wave Twitter individuals were busy saying, oh, now abortion's illegal, and retweeting nonsense, right? And I was just like, no, but that's really not the case. But again, they push it. People believe it. They're not held accountable. And there we go.
And it results in outcomes like the red tsunami that never occurred in 2022 in the midterm elections. A lot of Republican candidates lost narrow races because of the lie about abortion, and people believed it because that was a narrative that was carried forward. Because the Republicans are feckless, they're useless, they're idiots as a party. They just, you know, they don't stand up. You know, I remember for years hearing the nonsense about, here's one. If any Republicans worth the salt, when it came to the deficit ceiling being increased, they would just start talking about the obvious, which I talk about with according to the crap weasel down under. I have no audience, and it is pretty small. But anyway, for the tiny audience, I share it with them. The U.S. government, Matthew Dixon just gave a super chat because he's been trying to get my attention for a while. He said, can't listen to this racist transphobe anymore. 40 rands. We'll take the super chat. Thank you for the money. Coquetto's here. Y'all having fun without me? Well, you're the one screwing off in Egypt, man. It's not on us. I hope you got to the top of the pyramid and you sat on a point that's in your bum. Anyway, I'm just kidding. No, but Coquetto Rosani is in the chat. Good to see you there, Coquetto. Good to see you there. Otsihiri Jang. Anyway, so what was I saying there with the a moment ago was the the budget. Okay, so in the year 2000, the last year that a budget was approved by the federal government, and this is the Clinton administration, that budget was $1.8 trillion. 23 years ago, Dumo, 23 years ago, $1.8 trillion, which is a shocking amount of money. Now, they claimed it was a balanced budget, but that was a lie because they took $354 billion from Social Security and put it in the general revenue and then spent it and claimed it was $180 million or billion dollar surplus. But anyway, that's just accounting. Anyway, the point is that $1.8 trillion. The 2024 federal budget proposed by Joe Biden's administration, $6.9 trillion before any additional money for Ukraine or any supplementals, wow. $6.9 trillion. Now, here's the shocking part, and this is what Republicans ought to be droning on about. The $6.9 trillion includes $1.9 trillion in deficit spending, the deficit alone larger than the entire budget 23 years ago. Are we getting 350% better governance or more governance? No, we're not. And see, this is why the Republicans are so useless. I mean, that's not rocket science. People can debate me, but go look it up. It's a matter of fact. This is inflation-adjusted dollar. You can't play these games. The government is spending nearly four times as much money as it did, 3.5 times as much money as it did 20 years ago. And the deficit today is larger than the entire budget was then for national defense, for foreign assistance, for running the bureaucracy, for our ports, our air. It's nonsense. But where are the Republicans? Have you heard, Dumo, you're in South Africa. Have you heard anybody in America other than me just now tell you that that's the story? Because it's the truth.
No, this is the first time hearing it. It's the first time hearing it.
Exactly.
Yeah, first time.
And they're useless. Republicans are useless.
Yeah, agreed. Hopefully they'll have a candidate that can challenge, for their sake, that can challenge Biden or RFK. It depends, really, because I've seen that RFK guy is now he's been on social media waves now, and it looks like he's been making some interesting statements about the CIA and everything like that. And even people on the Republican side are starting to take a liking to him as well, which I find to be interesting.
Yeah, listen, when it comes to RFK Jr., Bobby Kennedy Jr., interesting guy, but he's got some serious issues. And the first one with me is like he's making this argument that China's only opposed to the U.S. because we're making them opposed to us. We're going after them. It's just total nonsense. Total nonsense. Hang on a second. I just had a little trouble with my screen here. Just to stretch the screen. There we go. No problem. Okay, we had a little overlap there. So for some reason, it's not. Okay, we're good. Okay, sorry. I thought the viewers were getting something they shouldn't see. So anyway, for some reason, the top of the menu is not there. What's going on there? Okay, there we go. Ooh, that's sexier. Maybe we should just go with that. We can see the background. Let me see. Anyway, yeah, so the title bar for some reason will show at the top. But yeah, no, Bobby Kennedy Jr. is interesting, but he's not going to be president. The Democrats are going to, I think what's actually happening, Dumo, is that right now the Democrats are in the active process of abandoning Joe Biden. And I made this claim when Susan Rice left the administration, because to me, this country was being run by Susan Rice, by proxy, Obama. Through Susan Rice, who was in that White House. Joe Biden isn't competent to order ice cream, let alone, you know, make decisions about Iran. So, or walk up a flight of stairs twice in a row, you know? So I think that what they're doing is when Susan Rice left the White House in May, that made it pretty clear to me that the Obamas are turning on Biden and that's where it's going to go. You're seeing a lot of gaffes, a lot of stuff come out on Biden now that was simply covered up in the past or not discussed, and people are talking about it endlessly. And I think it's because they're going to draft Gavin Newsom to be their standard bearer in the election. It's not going to be Bobby Kennedy. Okay. Bobby Kennedy is outside the clique. He's not in the clique of the cool kids. and he's not going to be the guy. You see it with YouTube censoring all of his interviews. You see it with social media and the media lying and hiding, you know, calling him a wackadoodle. But my problem with him is that his take on China is just is juvenile. This is what we've done since 2000, since 89, since Tiananmen. We've appeased the Chinese. Now we got Blinken going there on his knees, kowtowing in front of Xi Jinping, saying, "Oh, okay, we'll forget about the spy balloons that invaded our territorial sovereignty and floated over our nuclear missile bases in North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, our military bases. And then, you know, we shot it down when it was over the Atlantic because we want to look like we did something. We'll forget about the spy balloons and all the copyright theft and all the intellectual property theft and the spying and, you know, and the protectionism. Okay, just please be our friend." I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Right. That's what's going on. So, I mean, I think that we're going to see the Democrats draft gruesome Gavin Newsom as their standard bearer. It's my thought on it anyway.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that sounds correct, because Gavin Newsom he is that typical Democrat politician. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah, he's a wackadoodle. Well, as far as Republicans, despite the indictments, despite the document stuff, despite the civil case, that's another one. So, did you know this story? So New York made a law that for 12 months allowed people to file claims, supposedly because of the Me Too movement, claims of sexual harassment and assault or workplace, you know, uncomfortable against someone. The law was written to go after Donald Trump because they found someone who had allegations from 25 years ago that Trump sexually harassed her or sexually assaulted her, touched her in unwanted fashion. So they changed the law. She filed a civil suit, not a criminal suit, a civil suit for restitution. She had no evidence, no police report, no rape kit, no photographs of bruises, no witnesses, nothing. Just her allegations. Went to court, civil court, New York, against obviously a tainted jury. And then she won a judgment. Trump didn't even testify because he didn't feel it was worth his time. And so she won a judgment of like $5 million against Donald Trump for him sexually harassing her 25 years ago. So now they can say that Donald Trump, they'll say convicted, but that's not a conviction. In a civil court, it's not a conviction. Right. It's a judgment. So he has a civil judgment against him for sexual harassment from 25 years ago, which really to me is just hush money that the government lets somebody get. So it's a gravy train money, but the law has now expired again or is about to expire. And no one else can use it. It was only brought in for 1 year. The statute of limitations on the supposed crimes expired 20 years ago. This is insanity. Right. This is how people abuse the law. Anyway.
Yeah, if Donald Trump makes more traction, they might create another law just to get him down.
Well, I mean, Trump is ridiculous. Trump is up by 30 to 40 points in the polls on his closest chaser, and that's DeSantis. And now there's like 80,000 people in the race. I'm going to announce my candidacy for president next week. I mean, the mayor of Miami's in there and Chris Christie's in there. Chris Christie's not going to get conservatives to vote for him. He just said that sexual reassignment surgery should be allowed if the parents consent to it. Listen, I know lots of parents who raise kids, and they're not appropriate to make decisions for their children, and neither are the children. We'll have them become adults, and then we'll see what happens. But no, Chris Christie has shot himself in the foot because he thinks he'll appeal to leftists, and it isn't going to work. You got an R next to your name, buddy. They're not going to vote for you, and you look like you spend way too much time at KFC. They're not going to vote for you.
Yeah, man. Oh, that's American politics for now, you.
Slippery Pickle had a good comment here, Dumo. He said that you don't need a rape kit to convict Trump. You just need clear evidence of where the tan rubbed off. Oh, my goodness. Now, we laugh about that as conservatives, but you're libertarian. But I mean, it's kind of like conservative. But I mean, if you said that to a leftist about Biden, they'd go apoplectic. They'd be looking for firearms right now to shoot at us through the electrons. But I mean, we're laughing about it. But anyway, yeah. So anything else you want to go and talk about in the U.S. scene, or should we switch to South Africa?
Let's switch to South Africa.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about those evil Polish people and racist that they are.
Yes. Yeah, you go. Let's hear what's your thoughts on that.
Okay. Well, I talked to Ronaldo about this, and I've done it on TikTok. I'm still having fun on TikTok, even though they're not heating my content anymore. So it's slow grow, but it's faster than YouTube. Anyway, so no, I said, look, the bottom line is, you know, I did a TikTok and I said very calmly, like a 3-minute TikTok, and I said, listen, having worked in the diplomatic corps, worked in 8 embassies in Africa and worked with embassies in Europe and the Middle East and all over the world, actually. I know how this works. The Vienna Conventions apply. You have to, if you're an official for a government, you have to have aircraft clearance for overflight. You have to have landing clearance. If you bring a security detail, only certain officials can bring security detail, and you can bring firearms if you're military or, you know, or FBI or law enforcement like that from a country. You can do that. Protective services, but you have to have clearance and approval for that in advance. You have to have advanced teams that sort all that out, and it all has to be wired. And I said, here's the thing. When Wally Rota immediately started saying the Poles were racist because they wouldn't let people off that plane, my first question was this: was Ramaphosa and his personal security detail, all of whom have sidearms, by the way, and almost all of whom are black, all the government officials on his lead plane are almost all black, because like only Barbara Creasy is the last white person left the administration.
Right.
When they got off the plane, which they were allowed to do, and they were greeted warmly by Polish government officials at the Chopin airport and then escorted to meetings with the head of state and others, aren't they black? So exactly. Are they selectively racist? They only kept the people on the plane. And then they come with this, well, they jeopardized the security of the president. How? He had his personal security detail there. What he didn't have is an infantry company with crew-served weapons and explosive devices not declared to the Poles, and a whole bunch of names not declared to the Poles, 120 security people on a second plane. Meanwhile, the president of the Comoros, Asumani, had a two-person security detail from a country torn by ethnic strife and religious strife. He had two-person. And then Hachilema had a total delegation of 12 people, including a security detail from Zambia. But Ramaphosa has to have his personal security detail, all his government officials, and a second plane with 120 people and a dozen journalists. And because they didn't follow the rules, the Poles are racist. I mean, give me a break. Now, I just said that with a lot more energy and enthusiasm than I did when I did my TikTok. But I, of course, got attacked by black racist and white racist and calling me, you know, and without even watching the video, they just write all these nasty comments. I mean, this is ludicrous. I mean, here's the one more piece of this, which I share with Ronaldo too. And I said this, I said, isn't it ironic that the South African government is making noise, and South African analysts in Propaganda 24 and all the other outlets are making noise about the Americans intruding on South African sovereignty over the Lady R in Simonstown? They're trying to dictate our foreign policy. We're neutral, but they're trying to dictate our foreign policy. We're neutral, and they're trying to make dictate our foreign policy. Now, isn't it funny that they're complaining that South Africa is a sovereign nation when they fraudulently claim that America's impinging on South African sovereignty, which is not the case at all. AGOA, not at all. But meanwhile, they take exception to the Polish government exercising its sovereignty for an aircraft that didn't declare crew-served weapons, automatic weapons being brought into the country without their approval. You know, the Poles have to take action to deal with that. They can let those things in if they want to, but there's actions that have to be taken. When the president of the United States travels, there's like 7 huge C-17s with you know, a couple of the armored cars so they can mix it up so you don't know which one he's in. And then helicopters are in the back of those planes that fly him around when he lands. And, you know, dozens of Secret Service, lots of weapons. All of that's approved. And every country lets it happen. You never hear about it not happening. So, you look, I mean, the Poles were racist against the people on the second plane, but not the first plane full of black people. I mean, their logic makes no sense. Anyway, so there's my take on it. I mean, and instead of listening to someone that actually knows what the hell they're talking about, who has worked in the diplomatic community for 2 decades in Africa, the Middle East, and Europe, and knows what they're talking about, who has genuine bona fides, is not some useless, you know, UCT grad who, because they're a leftist, their daddy worked for somebody, got a job at Propaganda 24. Instead of listening to those clowns or listening to Peter Dutoy going, here's the last crisp on the plane, we're all starving to death. It's been 2 hours since they fed us. And do you know that the security guards are starting to smell really badly because we haven't had a shower in 12 hours. My goodness. You're there on a peacekeeping mission to deal with the Ukraine conflict. Ask the Ukrainian and Russian soldiers sitting in trenches in Donbass the last time they had a shower. Talk about perspective. You know, maybe you shouldn't be whining about crisp on a plane and showers, Peter Dutoy, instead of saying, listen, we landed. The Polish authorities said we didn't have the proper clearance. We're trying to sort this out. We're still on the plane. Boom. That's news, not whining. Anyway, there's my rant.
Thanks for that. I saw this on Twitter over the weekend, and I was very, again, perplexed by the allegations of racism. I just think this is just a typical go-to card or go-to phrase that people use when something that they don't like happens, and then the perpetrator happens to have a different skin color to them. That's what typically happens. And
Jan van Riebeck.
Exactly. And I was just like, really? I mean, you know, why that? Can it not occur that they probably had a different reason as to why they stopped you and said you couldn't enter the country or you couldn't get cleared by security? And I think for me, that's just the reality. And people just don't want to think that far anymore. It's just very easy to make allegations of racism because it's a statement that carries weight, a lot of weight in the narrative. And it's very easy for people just to believe it. And now, as you said, you know, you have experience in the diplomatic relations and organizations and stuff like that. But now the average person doesn't. And it was actually that head of security who said
it was Major General Wally Rota, who's not a major general. Yes. That's just an appointed rank. He's a private security guy who's been appointed the head of the Presidential Protection Service.
But a major general, like, no, that was added in last minute. Eh?
Guys,
here he is. Here's our Major General.
Yeah, remember him from we remember Major General Wally Roeder from the campaigns in the Angolan bush. Not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I saw other journalists complaining and stuff, and they were saying, "Oh, I cannot believe this is how they treat us." They try to make it sound like as if because they're from South Africa, they treated them badly. And I think, when the plane went back to South Africa, apparently they were guided by other aircraft. And they're like, look, there's other aircraft surrounding us. And they're only doing this because they feel like we're a threat and everything like that. And I'm like, look.
Oh, come on, man. It was a personal escort. You should take pride that they care so much about you.
I don't know. I felt that they were trying to milk the situation as well. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I remember when I went to Mauritius and we're about to leave, and then
did they let you into Mauritius?
No, they let me in.
But you're black. You know where that comes from, right? That's Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon 2. Lethal Weapon 2, which was the best one. Lethal Weapon 2, they go to the South African consulate in Los Angeles because they're trying to slip in to find out what's going on. And so Danny Glover is outside, and then Joe Pesci goes inside. Hey, look, my friend wants to immigrate to South Africa. This is during apartheid, 1989. My friend wants to immigrate to South Africa. And then they've got this official there who's an Afrikaner, goes, of course your friend can. No, you should bring your friend in. We welcome immigration to South Africa. And so Danny Glover comes in and he says, yeah, I want to immigrate to South Africa. You know, big black guy goes, but you're black.
shame.
Oh, it's so funny.
This is like in the 80s, right?
Yeah, 1989. Yeah, that's when it came out.
Oh, my word. Right. I mean, I'm just saying, like, these things happen, like, you know, when you get stopped at immigrations and everything like that.
It happened to me at O.R. Tambo. Go, you were saying Mauritius, and I'll tell you my story. Go with your, and I had a diplomatic passport. Good.
Yeah. For us, we had our documentation. There was just something not right. Mm-hmm. I think it was a charter flight and stuff, and there was something that was
and you got delayed.
In. We got delayed by, like, you know, an hour or two, but then eventually we left, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, no one is going on social media and saying, look at these Mauritians. You know, they don't like us South Africans and wada, 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 wada. You know, no one was doing that. I just think they're milking the situation. Or it could be this, right? It could be this. Maybe the second plane, they knew very well that they were not going to get cleared. So they still went ahead with everything.
Just to create a crisis.
Exactly. It just reminds of that story of a guy who actually walked into a shop the one time, and he was wearing underpants, saying it was traditional wear, and then they kicked him out of the shop. And then he's like, look, these guys are being anti my culture. And I just think, for me, this could be another one of those.
No, you have a fair point. That's a very fair point. It's a very cynical approach, but I mean, we are dealing with the ANC here, so I mean, that's a very real possibility. Some stupidity like that actually is in play here. But I mean, I tell this example. So in 2010, I was still at the embassy in Habarone, and I had three conferences I had to go to: a humanitarian assistance conference, a development conference, and then a security cooperation, all in Arusha in Tanzania. Well, it's a yellow fever zone, so you have to have a yellow fever vaccination. Well, I have seven booklets of immunizations that I've had over 40 years in the army, and yellow fever is good for 10 years. Well, my vaccination was only like 4 years prior. So I had gone through the first time, and when I came off, it's a flight where nobody on that flight coming from Nairobi is a diplomat. I was the only diplomat. So I have my black passport. I go to Artambo. I go up and I show it. And the guy asks for my immunization record for yellow fever. I show it to him. Okay, that's fine. It's his prerogative. South Africa's a sovereign state. They have a right to make sure that I've been immunized against yellow fever coming from his own. No complaint. Second time, a couple weeks later, same thing. Third time, on the day that I flew, lots was going on. I didn't have time to go to the house and pick up my shot record. It wasn't the office. So I printed out my medical records from the Army, which is legit. It's got the doctor's name, signature date, and all that on there. And I didn't have yellow paper. I had white paper. So I printed out on white paper at the embassy. I took that with me. When I came back from Arusha, the guy said, "Can I see your shot record?" And I showed it to him. He goes, "Oh, this isn't, I can't accept this." I said, "Why not?" "Well, it's not yellow." I said, "It doesn't have to be yellow. That's just an informal nickname for the World Health Organization. Yeah. You can see it's an official medical record that shows my immunization." "Well, you can't enter the country." I said, "But you're the same official who let me in here 3 weeks ago. And in 2 weeks prior to that," he goes, "Well, I can't take it." I said, "What do I do?" He said, "Well, there's a clinic right there. Go over there and you can get a shot."
Right.
And my first thought is, okay, so I'll get a shot there. If I have yellow fever, I've already spread it all over this part of the airport, and I'll spread it before the vaccine even takes effect. But anyway, never mind. So I walked in. Now that little office is closed now. It's not there anymore. It's right by where the ramp comes down when you come in RTM, when the other one comes up to go to immigration.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So there was a little office right back behind it.
Hospital, yes.
Yeah, it was a little hospital. I don't know if it still is. It was closed last time I looked there. But so I went back up there. I went back there and they said, "Yeah, we can give you the shot. $130. I said, "Rand, no, US. We only take US. Can I get credit card?" "No, dollars." Well, fortunately, I had a couple hundred bucks US on me. It's emergency cash. And I paid $130 to get an unnecessary immunization to come into the country. Look, it's South Africa's prerogative to force me to have immunization. I have no problem with that. But this petty bureaucracy, which that could have been the case in Poland too. I even allowed for that initially. It could have been petty bureaucracy because they were saying, well, they had copies of certificates. But as it turns out, they didn't have certification for the heavy weapons, which was what the problem was. And they didn't name everybody in the plane, which is the other problem. Anyway, but I even allowed for that. But I mean, petty bureaucracy can play a role too. But I mean, I've been delayed. I've almost been delayed on military flights with government officials landing in a country. And we've also been denied overflight in a country and had to divert en route. So I, you know, these people don't know what they're talking about, and this racism. I mean, so it's just utter nonsense. I mean, does that make African countries racist because I'm a white guy and they wouldn't let me land in the country, or they wouldn't let us bring in firearms to protect our generals? Come on, that doesn't make them racist. That just means they're asserting authority. And there's one more aspect to this, Dumo, and I think this is why it comes into play with someone who has an elevated sense of self-worth like Wally Rhoda. I have worked in diplomatic channels in Europe, in government, in North America, in Africa, in Middle East. And a lot of people in these positions have a very high opinion of themselves. And they think that they deserve blue light escorts and people bending over them backwards. And I guarantee you that Wally Rhoda's ego played a big role in this escalation that he claims took place and this racism thing. He's full of it. He demands people to snap because he is the head of the Presidential Protection Services, and you must do. I saw this in Liberia. We had in Liberia, and I'll wrap this up and then I'll get back to you in a second. In Liberia, we had a situation in which the United Nations mission there, the commander's vehicle, was chased off the road by the security detail protecting the Liberian president. They were following the law, they were driving down the road safely, and these blue light escorts came through without the president even. The president wasn't there. Sure. Going to the airport to pick up the president who wasn't supposed to arrive for hours. They forced the commander of the United Nations mission off the road. Then the guy got out, went over and sliced their tires so they couldn't move.
Wow.
And drove on to the airport. This is the sort of entitlement and arrogance that it happens the world over, but I've seen it far too often in Africa. And I seriously believe that that played a role in this whole situation.
Right. Makes sense. It does make sense. I think, you know, there are people in government who have very high opinions of themselves. And I think that because they occupy those positions, they feel that they can just, you know, strut their stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when they actually do get challenged, or
and racism.
Someone says, hey, exactly. There you go. I mean, and I've seen this at university as well. I mean, yep. I remember the one time when I just finished my master's dissertation and I had to go pay the registration fee because I handed it in after the 31st of the previous year. And I remember there was this guy, he was complaining at the fees office. And talking about how badly he's being treated. And the way he said it, he's like, I've paid so much money at this university. I cannot believe I'm getting this treatment and whatever. And the guy's like, look, so you just need to pay this. It's not a lot of money. You need to pay this and everything will be fine.
But
and
I
just went on and on.
Who are you to charge me?
Exactly. And I think what's happening is this is just something that I've noticed. I'm not saying it's an African thing or whatever, but I think especially people in my generation, there is this sense of entitlement, which I think is a bit toxic, in my opinion. There is this idea that the world owes them something. Hmm. And whenever challenges come in life, they, you know, fold over and they will say things like, you know, someone's against me and stuff like that, when it really isn't like that. Sometimes life is unfair. Sometimes you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. It happens. And people just don't go through that. And as a result of that, they just think that everything should be served in a silver platter. And as a result of that, you know, that then they'd behave that way. And I can see that in government as well. So, yeah, yeah. I do think that perhaps if that Rota guy
General Wally Rota.
Wally Rota, perhaps if he had a better ego, maybe this would not have made the news in the way that it did. But again, of course, you know, you just got to pull out the race card because maybe in his life, he saw that it works quite a lot.
Well, sometimes you just have to follow the rules. And they didn't do that. Well, listen, I was going to switch to more African affairs, but Michael Holmes just jumped in chat and asked a very apropos question. Let me get your thoughts on this. Now, before you respond, let me just point out that Gate McKenzie's been in the news twice recently three times. The three times he's been in the news recently have been his trip to Orania, in which when he was interviewed by Panul, whose subscriber base I'm envious of, but Panul, when he interviewed him, both of them said, no, wait, no, it wasn't Panul. I'm sorry. It wasn't Panul. No. He just went Panul now. He was interviewed by Propaganda. Well, Mpofu Wash, that's what it was. I'm sorry, I'm confused. So Mpofu Wash and Propaganda Unfiltered, as I call that, you know. So anyway, but he was interviewed there, and Walsh is like, you know, Orania's racist, and then McKenzie said Orania's racist too, without any evidence of it whatsoever. It's kind of like I just saw a video saying that black people aren't allowed to live there. Well, no, that's not entirely accurate. People who are culturally aligned, who speak off our cons, which would include about 600,000 black South Africans, if they want to live there, technically they could live there, but they just don't choose to. Anyway, so in that video, McKenzie came out talking about Orania. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing was that he was accused of not depositing 3 million rand from a fundraiser in Sandton City for Karoo Central. Or Central Karoo that never made it there. And now the latest thing came out that supposedly in a by-election in Gauteng, his party or McKenzie offered 5 million rand to the DA candidate to withdraw. That's the allegation. So he's in there three times. So that's Gate McKenzie in the news a lot the past 2 weeks. But Michael Holmes says, what does Duma think about coalitions in 2024 and Gate McKenzie? So that's, I'm not trying to wind people up. I'm just mentioning that Gate McKenzie's been in the news and also, you know, kind of set Duma up for any of those things he wants to talk about.
Cool. All right. So the coalitions.
I'm sorry. I got to stop you real quick because I got to deal with this. Because sorry, Dumo. That was a bit rude, but I got to do this. It just came in. Michael Holmes is Colonel. How many black and colored people live in Orania? Well, Michael, to my knowledge, zero. How many white people live in the Ingunyama Trust in KZN? How many colored people? How many Indians live in there? I think some do, but can you elaborate on that? You get my point here. Okay. Anyway, that doesn't make people racist because people have cultural affinity. That's a whole other story. Sorry, Dumo. Go ahead. You're Gaten.
Yeah. No, that's actually an important point. I think you shouldn't look at demographic representation within a region does not necessarily mean that there isn't racism there. Sometimes people just decide to live among those that share similar values, language, and so forth. Yeah. And we see that already in South Africa. Even after, you know, the like as you would say, the Bantustans and so forth, you'd still find high concentrations of people from a particular culture within a particular region in South Africa. And even if you go to the Eastern Cape, for example, you'll even find farmers who speak Xhosa, right?
Yep, yep.
And they're white, and they're white, yes, white farmers. So I think, you know, that's how it is, really. It's like that everywhere. Now,
well, it's problematic, yes, to pick the one place where you know that only white people are living and say they're racist based on the fact only white people are living there. Should I talk about Alexandra, Khayelitsha, Gugumela? Are they racist people living there simply because only black people live there? No, they're poor people living there because they're poor. Same with the informal settlements of Afrikaners living outside of Pretoria who live in abject poverty. I remember at the beginning of the lockdown when SABC went there, a reporter, he goes, so is there a reason why you don't let black people live here in this informal settlement? Okay, so my question was, so you're asking this poor white guy who has no money why he's excluding black people from living on land and squatting like he is. Do you even know they're doing that? Maybe black people I'll never forget that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I just think we just have to make that point. Like, you know, people choose where they want to be. And sometimes the outcomes, they're not necessarily in control of them, right?
Yeah.
But if people could choose to live among people that are similar to them in, let's say, culture and stuff like that. Hence, you find what's happening in KZN, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and so forth, concentration of the demographics. All right.
Okay, anyway, so now back to Gayton. Go ahead.
To Gayton. So when it comes to Gayton McKenzie, look, I think he's made a name for himself. I just don't know if the Patriotic Alliance will have any sort of, you know, will they get enough votes to
traction.
Really be a playmaker? Yeah, traction to be important in the next election. I do not know. I really don't know. But Gayton McKenzie as an individual, very popular. I think that, you know, his recent, let's say, I wouldn't say skirmishes, but events that he experienced, I think that, you know, he's making a good name for himself. I think one of the places that the Patriarch, well, not places, but municipality that his party has taken over, or let's say won over, it looks like it's doing well, according to Morning Shot. Like, I don't know if it's a biased or whatever, but I mean, I trust Roman's judgment on that. So it looks like it's doing well. I mean, he went there himself, so it looks like it's going okay. But I don't know if that'll translate into national prominence. The same thing with Herman Mashaba as well. Great on the municipal scale, but can he do it on the national scale? We don't know. So now let's talk about the coalitions. I think with regards to the coalitions, what role will it play? I think if, let's say, the ANC gets enough votes to force a coalition movement, I don't think anything will come out of that. I think we'll see what we see happening in Joburg right now, or not even Joburg right now, Nelson Mandela Bay, for example, where it's been chaotic since like 2018. We're going to see something like that. I don't think any new laws will come into play and stuff like that, which is good for me. Because as a libertarian, I just don't like it when people just create new laws out of nowhere. But I think what we'll see is when there's coalition politics, I think the news media will have much more to feed on, in my opinion, because there's going to be a lot more drama. You know, that's what I think is going to happen. If again, the ANC have to be forced to make a coalition. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
No, it's interesting. You know, Michael Holmes has asked another question here, which is interesting too. And he said, who will the ANC go into coalition with? I think the PA, not the EFF. Well, Michael, it's interesting you say that. And all things being equal, I would agree with your analysis on the surface. And the reason is because I know people who are senior in South Africa, and I know that Cyril Ramaphosa has a detest for Malema and the EFF that is palpable. I mean, he really hates Julius Malema and he hates EFF. And I don't see, as long as Ramaphosa remains ahead of that party, which doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon, that they would ever go into coalition with EFF unless they were absolutely desperate. And even then, they might not consider it. The PA, yes. But what I find interesting is that Morning Shot, Roman, now listen, when you trust Roman's judgment, but Roman thinks he's actually attractive and he's not. So his judgment's a little skewed. Just saying.
Oh, wait. No. Only on, I only trust his judgment on what is it? On what's this? On Jason McKean's track record.
I'm just kidding.
But as
I'm
a candidate, teasing. I don't know.
No, I'm just teasing. No, but Morning Shot, they seem to think that that the PA is going to be a national factor. I don't see it. And I wouldn't mind being proven wrong for once. Not that I want the PA to do well, but I just like, this is curious because a number of people are talking about the Patriotic Alliance as a force at national level. And I think Herman Mashaba has a better chance of being a national factor. And I'm not convinced that he will be a national factor. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Action SA cap at 3-5%. Best case. I mean, honestly, in a national election, the PA to me is not going to be a factor. I don't know why people are convinced of that. I will say this. Gabe McKenzie is becoming a master showman. He's certainly learning how to manipulate or use the press to his advantage. Maybe manipulate's not the right word, but use the press to his advantage. People aren't talking about the fact he's a convicted criminal. That's not an issue that comes up.
There we go.
People aren't talking about the 3 million that should be front page news. The 3 million Rand, where did the 3 million Rand go? There's evidence it was deposited in a lawyer's account for a lawyer that's a friend of his, and that the money never got to Central Karoo. That was a year ago, and people should be up in arms about that, but that's just kind of dying and gone away. So I think McKenzie certainly is a personality that can draw attention and maybe will draw votes just on the force of his personality. But I'm not convinced that the PA or Action SA are going to do particularly well. The other parties have got a lot to prove too. The Democratic Alliance is not exactly, you know, making me excited about their campaign. They're moonshot and we're already seeing trouble. The UDM is on its last gasp. I don't know if Bento Holomisa can even retain the votes they had in 2019. Now, the one thing I think will be interesting when it comes to coalition politics is the electoral future and possibilities for the Inkatha Freedom Party. They, as I've said, since the municipal elections, have had a golden opportunity to prove to people in KwaZulu-Natal, which could give them enough of a percentage of vote to make them a bigger factor for a coalition. Since that November election, they've had a great opportunity. Before the 2021 municipal election, the IFP had just seven municipalities under their control in KZN, nowhere else in the country, of course, because they're mostly regional. Now, through an outright majority, a coalition majority or a minority coalition, they control 16 municipalities. The ANC voters, because of all the chaos and the insurrection, stayed home. Now, the IFP barely gained any votes, but the ANC cratered in KZN. The IFP can take those voters and draw them to their standard, kind of like the Democratic Alliance, I think, is successfully doing in Howick and Mgeni, because of Chris Pappas and that administration, people I've talked to in that when I was there, and Black folks, white folks are really impressed at what's happening. They see change. If that can translate into votes, and if the IFP can do that, then they can be a bigger factor in a coalition. But I'm not convinced the IFP is doing it. I am waiting for an interview date now with Labisa, the head of the IFP. I've interviewed in the past. I've asked to come back on the channel. He should be on the channel hopefully next week, and we'll talk about their prospects. But the Inkatha Freedom Party, I think, is a dark horse here that no one's talking about. Now, they're not going to gain 15 or 20% of the vote, but they could go from, 5% back to 9 or 10%. And that can make a huge impact, particularly if the DA can claw anything back and get, say, to 25, that gives 35. And that all comes at the expense of the ANC, losing votes. So they go from 50 to 49 down to 40 just based on that. And that really changes the landscape. Anyway, a lot can happen. This is just, procrastinating, whatever it is, predicting, it's Nostradamus like here, or Senior von Rensburg for South Africans. Who knows what's going to happen, but I'm not convinced at all that the PA is going to be a major factor. They could be a factor if, the DA gets 23% and the IFP gets 5% and a Freedom Front Plus gets 2% and then the PA gets 2% and Action SA gets, then they could be a factor.
Yeah.
Fractious right. coalition. Then they'll be a factor. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
I think that's probably what maybe the Morning Shot guys meant. I think if there is a coalition, That's where the PA will be good. But now if the ANC do get enough votes to get a majority, then the PA is just going to be just another party.
Oh, but look, I'm unequivocal on that. And I've said it since Election Day on November 1st, 2021. The ANC is not getting 50% of those who bother to vote. It ain't going to happen. They're not getting 50% in 2024. I guarantee it.
You're right. You're right, Chris. You're right. I mean, we haven't had the load shedding has eased up a bit, you know.
Yeah, but they're burning up the generators and they're using diesel they don't have money for. I mean, how many white monopoly capitalists are going to continue to fund the ANC's diesel generation project?
You know, no, but I mean, obviously, I mean, look, it's still the election is still some time away.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot can happen. Well,
it's close, but it's still some time away, and a lot can happen. But I don't know. I mean, it's also you and I think you have a point there. It's also going to rely on the turn up of the voters. I mean, the municipal elections, I think it was less than half of the registered voters.
No. Of the eligible voters, 13% showed up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, registered voters, 31% showed up.
Look at that. So, if that's the case, right? If I anticipate that if really the ANC gets below 50%, I mean, which will happen, it'll be mainly because of the fact that people don't show up. Because there is this narrative that I heard that when South Africa's doing well, ANC gets more votes. When they're not doing well, ANC gets less votes. So it seems that people just would not vote, then rather vote for any other party besides the ANC.
Yeah. Actually,
the way things are going right now, it could go that way.
I misspoke. Let me correct myself when I spit that out there. The ANC got 13% of the eligible voters. 31% is the correct figure for those who turned out. So I misspoke. I want to make sure I'm clear that people don't understand. The ANC only got 13. So people like the ANC is a juggernaut. Of the eligible people eligible to vote in South Africa, and millions don't bother to even vote or register, but of that total, which is approaching, you know, 40 million, whatever, only 13% of them actually pulled a lever for the ANC in the municipal elections. That's how unpopular the ANC is. But by the same token, a far smaller number pulled it for the DA, for the IFP. But the point is that people, yeah. So, I mean, we could say the same thing about those parties, but the ANC doesn't have a hammer lock on anybody. And I think the proof of the pudding is that the number of voters who didn't show up in KZN after that internal insurrection, the nonsense that happened there, that really had an impact. And people were like, screw this. They just didn't show up. So Michael Holmes says, Gate McKenzie had a private account that he used to deliver on the things he promised during his term as mayor. Okay, but that's not legitimate unless it's his personal funds he's using. And then there should be an accounting trail. There should be transparency. Rob Herzog, I think, funded it. People think Gate delivers unlike other politicians. Michael, I think you're correct that some people are of the opinion that Gate McKenzie delivers because there's 100 days of promises. But then why did he resign as mayor? That's interesting. And then the second thing is that that's not germane to the 3 million rand that was raised at a fundraiser, which he got permission from the city to do on their behalf. So either the money goes to the Central Karoo or Gate McKenzie misrepresented the purpose of raising the money. And the money has not gone to the Central Karoo. So that raised another question. This event occurred a year ago. Where's the frickin' money at? That's a separate issue. So anyway.
Fair point.
Do you, okay, you know, now this is now, I know, I we'll see what Duma says, but I know that Morning Shot, Roman and I both agree this is a scary prospect. And Roman actually thinks it's a good prospect. I don't. And that is, Michael says, does Duma think the ANC could go into coalition with the DA? Roman thinks that they could and they will, and it's a good thing for South Africa because most people just ignore the law and they'll be able to continue to ignore the law and continue their lives the way they are. I don't think that's a good thing, but that to me would be the axis of evil if the DA goes into coalition with the ANC. It would be like Zimbabwe with the MDC and ZANU-PF. It's a disaster for South Africa. What are your thoughts on the possibility and the outcome?
Right. The possibility of that, well, let's say probability. Okay, it is possible, definitely. But probability, I am not sure. But let's just say it does happen, right?
Okay.
Yeah, Roman does have a point. I think that the people are not. Yeah, it's gonna be pretty much the same as, and I don't think new laws are gonna be implemented. I think they're probably gonna have to meet halfway on a lot of issues. But now, since they're in a coalition, what is the DA going to demand of the ANC? They're going to say, listen, you know, since we're in a coalition, you need to, you know, put some of our ministers in your cabinet, for example. And also, and now it goes back to your point in the axis of evil. I think the DA is going to say, listen, ANC, we see that you're eating a lot of the money, right? You know, that money needs to come to us now. You know, we need to have a piece of that pie as well, you know? And I think that's what, that's going to be the case. And I think that's where, well, not going to, but most likely going to be the case, given your thing of the axis of evil. Because I think a lot of these politicians, when they, you know, campaign to be in parliament and everything like that, really, they just want a piece of that pie. They're like, look, ANC, look, we get it, right? We get it. I mean, if we were in power, we'd be doing the same thing as you guys, right? Maybe, you know, we won't make it so obvious. So I think that's what's going to happen. And then eventually you'll see news stories break out, like, you know, without mentioning politicians' names, like you might find another Palapala incident, but with a DA politician, you know, money stacked somewhere and so forth. So that's what I think may happen from that perspective. But in terms of new laws, I don't see any being implemented, because I think what they're going to do, they're just going to stick to the ideologies at that point.
Yeah.
And then, but in terms of money, oh my goodness, we're going to be seeing rich DA politicians now.
Yeah, no, I think it's a disaster for South Africa, because it'll continue the status quo. The ANC, if that's such a thing would happen, the ANC would be smart to hand finance off to the DA, to hand off a number of other things, but they're not going to hand off like land or home affairs or defense. Right. They're going to hold on to those things, and the intelligence, they're going to hold on to all those things. Same thing Mugabe did, which meant that the governance was ineffective. The interesting thing, though, is because the economy is in such a disaster, because the currency situation and stagflation in Zimbabwe, when the MDC took over and Tenda Mbidi took over as the finance minister, it turned things around overnight, and the economy began to recover. The currency, you know, they used the dollar, they used the rand, but primarily the dollar, and people stopped starving, and things started to return to normalcy. Mm-hmm. But they had no control over the police, who still oppressed the population, and particularly their opposition politicians who were in government with. So it was just a disaster for Zimbabwe, and it just allowed it, you know, Mugabe to continue on, even though he lost an election. He lost the election and refused to leave power. And what was SADC's response? Well, it should be a government of national unity. No, he lost. They cheated. They stole ballots. They stuffed boxes. They killed opposition opponents. They raped opposition members of parliament, the security service did, and they still lost the presidency in 2008. To Morgan Tsvangirai, and they refused to give up. Mugabe wouldn't leave, and the world sat by and watched it happen. And I think a lot of South Africans might be a little concerned that if the ANC loses control of the government in 2024, will they give up the levers of power? That's another question we haven't addressed here. I'm not going to say they won't. I hope they will. But I mean, seeing the way that people like Wally Rota respond to simple things like their failure to accomplish something. I mean, look at how they demonize Andre de Ruyter. And he's a racist, and that didn't work. And he broke the law. He broke the law. What? Because he didn't report criminals. Because when they report criminals, they murder people, like Babita Deo Karan. You know, I mean, she was assassinated for reporting tender fraud at the Charles Mackenzie Hospital. I mean, you know, when de Ruyter did that interview, people asked him what's going on. I said, well, his family's probably in Ireland. I doubt they're in South Africa, because they've just become targets for assassination. And he's not living. Apparently, he's living in Germany is what I hear. But anyway, but I mean, you know, it's a gangster state, man. Will the ANC leave power? I used to think they would. I'm not entirely convinced they will now.
Yeah. Given what you just said now, I didn't actually consider that. I get it. So, because I was talking from the perspective as assuming that ANC would let go of power.
As was I until a moment ago, but I'm saying this is another possibility.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, because I think that's a possibility that people should take seriously, in my opinion. This is Africa, right? And also we've seen, as you said, what happened in Zimbabwe as well. So I think, will the ANC let go of it? I find that really hard to see that happening. They'll try their best to hold on for as long as possible. Or we might see like what a Yahya Jammeh situation. Remember Yahya Jammeh with Gambia?
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, he lost an election and he
stayed got on his borders. They were going to invade.
And he was saying that he's never going to leave. And then one day he just decides, okay, guys, I'm leaving. And then when he, off the day after he left, they found that the state coffers were empty. So I think
that's why he left. He cleaned out the bank.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think maybe the NC will do that.
Well, like, but okay, to be fair, there's nothing left to steal. So they don't have to wait for that. It's all gone. It's all gone. Well,
they'll take the scraps, right? Yeah. So they'll take the scraps.
They'll take the W's off the keyboard at the executive mansion. No, but look, there is a precedent for the ANC losing power and giving it up peacefully. The Western Cape. They briefly had a coalition that ruled the Western Cape. They lost and they handed over power. But you know, giving up the jewels, the crown jewels, the national governance, that's a whole other ball of wax. Exactly. I'm inclined to say the ANC will leave, but I would not be shocked if they didn't. I'll say that's where I'll leave it at. Is that fair?
That's a fair statement. That's fair. Yeah.
So listen, let's shift a little bit. We got a few more minutes here. Let's shift a little bit. Did you see what happened in Puntland, where the president, where they were meeting in parliament in Puntland? Of course, Puntland is a breakaway portion of Somalia on the northeast, right on the Horn of Africa. That's where Puntland is at, next to Somaliland, two breakaway republics. It's ruled itself since the late 1990s. Anyway, they have a parliament, and the parliament had a meeting. And I don't mean to laugh, but the opposition was upset that the president was trying to extend his term in office by altering the constitution. So they attacked the parliament, the supporters did, and 26 people were killed in the shooting. And another, I think 20 were wounded. This is at a parliament over the, this is crazy. I mean, did you hear about this? It's just, it broke in the news this morning. Yeah.
No, I didn't hear about that. That's hectic. That's quite drastic measures. I think, usually when people in power try to change the law in their favor, you know, there will be complaints and then afterwards it dies down and they just change the law anyway. But I've never heard of a situation where guys say, you know what, because of this, we're actually going to attack and then 26 people died. Yep. Jeepers. I mean, that is hectic. Some people will say that's such an action is actually a bit excessive. So even if the opposition were right in mentioning that he should not have changed the constitution, but the fact that 26 people died, I mean, the president could say, you see, this is why I'm extending my time. Because if we let these
just gave an excuse.
exactly. Now, there we go. I mean, now it works in his favor. And that's just horrible. That's very sad news.
Well, I mean, I don't know that was their intent, but the fact that they stormed the parliament building with weapons and a firefight ensued, I don't know. For the people in D.C., that might be an actual insurrection. Just saying.
Yeah. Much, much worse than January 6th. Yes.
Yeah. Much, much clearer intent was located in that situation. But yikes. Anyway, it's crazy stuff. But but South Africa's economy continues to limp along. It's crazy. Now, the two other things that spring up, come back to South Africa. Two other things came up. The number one, they released updated rules on water allocation and denying water to people based on their skin pigmentation. I mean, that's, talk about human rights violations. That's insane. Water is the most essential resource that people need. And then comes food. So that was one. And then the other is the Employment Equity Act amendment, which sets quotas based on race for Indians, coloreds, whites, and blacks. And it is thoroughly unachievable. And beyond that, it's not about government employment. This is in the private sector. The government telling Edgars and telling Puma petrol stations and telling what's a sports mart and all this thing, you can only hire this many people because they're not the right skin color. That's insane. I mean, this is obviously a populist move to attract votes for 2024 for a flailing and failing ANC. That's the only way I see it, because this makes no sense. Why, after 29 years of ANC or 28 years of ANC, 29 years of ANC governance, is it necessary to continue apartheid-like racial quota policies? It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Agreed. I think I think it is more of a political move. Whether if it will actually get passed is another thing altogether. I just feel, in my opinion, that people that want to look at this right, you know, from an ideological perspective, I mean, really, it's not right. It's not right for the government to step in and tell you that this is you can't have so many people of a certain skin color within your company. As a libertarian, I always say that, look, if the company wants to decide that by themselves without government interference, fine, they'll pay the price for it. Because if they're going to say that, look, we don't want whites or we don't want blacks, and then they found out that, you know, that, how can I put it, that that a particular skill is more concentrated within a specific race or something, and then they, you know, forego that, and then they lose out in the market, then yeah, that's their problem. They should not be, they should have actually taken better care in actually hiring the right people. But let's go back to the racial quotas. If they are unachievable, I really think that what might happen is that the private sector may just not follow it. And they might even say, you know what, if they're going to fine us for it, fine, let them fine us for it. And I think even in apartheid South Africa, that happened before.
Yes.
Where right in the 1980s, right at the end, right, there were racial laws that stated that you could only hire so many black people and so forth. And companies actually hired more black people than what they were supposed to. Part of that was due to the fact they're willing to work for less. And again, the guys would come in and say, oh, you got too many blacks. And they would be like, yeah, that's fine, we're making a lot of money. And they said, okay, now we have to fine you. And they're like, yeah, we have to pay the fine. And they paid the fines. So I think that might be the case in the future for many private companies. I think they're going to say, look, it's unachievable. But at the same time, I mean, imagine if you're the CEO, right, of a company. So you have to look out for the best interest of the shareholder. So I think what will happen is that they will try to hire the right people for the right jobs, make as much money as possible, and then they'll just see a fine as another expense. And just put it under another category, under fines. But then the government may amp it up and say, no, we now have to pay more fines and stuff like that. So I think that's pretty much what's going to be the case. I think the shareholders will understand, the board members will understand of those companies. And yeah, they'll just have to live with it. If it gets signed into law, of course.
Well, I think that it's an election ploy, number one. And number two, I think it's potentially and intentionally another graft method for corrupt ANC politicians to take bribes under the table so that companies aren't sanctioned. Well, you give me 50,000 Rand, we won't put you on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen here. I think that's, and then the fines. Yeah. And you're right. Shareholders will accept that in South Africa, but this will be devastating to foreign direct investment. Why in the world would I take my dollars and invest the business in South Africa if I have to pay fines because I have to hire people who aren't qualified because I don't meet racial quotas? I hire the best people, and that is the end of the road. I don't hire people who are dishonest. I don't hire people because they're white, because they're black, because they're colored, because they're Christian, Muslim, Jew. I don't care about that. I want the best team, the most effective team to accomplish my goals and make my company profitable so we can expand, grow, create new jobs, and increase wealth for ourselves, our shareholders, and our employees. And that's as simple as that. And people interested in genuine investment in South Africa are going to be, wait a second, I got to build my own power plant because the electricity is going to damage my computers because it's unreliable, or destroy my electronics because the power surges all the time, or I have no power 8 hours a day for 8 months a year. I have to hire my own security services because it's dangerous to ship your goods. They get robbed, cash in transit, and cell phone heist in broad daylight in the capital of Pretoria. I have to train a workforce because workforce productivity is abysmal in South Africa. It's uneven. There are pockets of excellence like Dumo Dengo, with a great work ethic. And then you've got Ronaldo down here with a terrible work ethic, you know? No, but I mean, but you know what I'm talking about? The workforce is uneven right in its capability. And then on top of that, I've got health issues. I mean, a third of my workforce has HIV and/or tuberculosis and is gone 20% of the time. impinging on my productivity. I got to put I can't use the rail lines because they don't exist. The cables have been stolen. The rails themselves have been stolen. And anybody wants to refute that, I have the photographic evidence of it. I went to the rail lines in Haoteng and I saw them in the northern part there where they've stolen it all. And on all of that, then I got potholes that damage the trucks. And when my truck breaks down, it gets raided by all these people waiting to steal from it. Why in the world would I invest in South Africa?
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, the foreign investment question. I didn't think about that, but that's really, I think that's what's going through their mind, because again, they're there to make profit, and they're going to weigh up the cost, and they're going to see, look, it's not really worth to produce anything in this country. I remember General Motors used to be in this country, and they left for more or less the same reasons.
Well, they also left because they were bankrupt. I mean, they had to dump foreign assets. That was an excuse. They were probably going to leave the market anyway, but that's why they eventually did, because the Obama administration stole the shares from the stockholders and became Government Motors. But here's another reason. And I didn't talk about land. So what if I'm Amazon and I negotiate to buy a disused site that no one's talked about in 30 years? It's just sitting there in the Western Cape, and I put a plant up, and suddenly I get this indigenous, that's our ancestral land, you know? Where was that? Why isn't it a park or a cemetery or a reserve in the last 30 years? You had 30 years to raise that concern. Suddenly when Amazon wants, no, we know what it is. People want grift. They want some of the money from it. And that's why they try to stop it. So then I have to deal with that. I build a factory or warehouse in South Africa. And then I get this fraudulent land claim that ties my attorneys up into perpetuity. It costs me a fortune. Another reason why it's not competitive. South Africa is doing everything it can to make itself an undesirable destination for foreign direct investment, except for the just energy transition. Woohoo! Yeah, a lot of money there.
definitely. Yeah, and I think, I mean, we're definitely going to need the foreign investment, but I mean, given the current situation, I don't think people are going to want to invest in this country.
No.
Very few people will, unless they're willing to, be corrupt like the government. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Rhino said discussions won't change the situations. We should make sure everyone we know, including our neighbors, register to vote and go to vote. Rhino, I agree 100%. And for those who've been with me all along on the previously, by the way, I don't know if you know, I got my old channel back. Did you know that?
Yes. I saw that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I, after 23 months in the gulag, I got it back, but they're stealing subscribers every day. So it's dripping down. If you watch me on the old channel, you watch me on this channel, I made a concerted effort to convince South Africans to register to vote and vote in municipal elections 2021. And the turnout was 31%. I interviewed 45 candidates from 8 different parties in the 3 months prior to the election, and 31% of South Africans went out to vote. Already, that was a turnout. So I've already started my coverage of the 2024 election. I've already was at the launch of the campaign for the UIM, a small party in the Western Cape led by Neil De Beer. I've already interviewed Peter Hernevoud from the Freedom Front Plus. I'll have Labisa on here shortly, and I'll continue my coverage. I intend to be in South Africa in the 2 weeks leading up to the election, meeting people in the street with microphones, sticking in their face and talking and trying to get people out. I'm doing all I can to get South Africans to vote, but y'all got to get off your bums. I can't make people go get registered. I can't make people rock up at the polling station. That's on South Africans. All I can do is try to convince people that complaining and not voting isn't the answer. And I don't want to hear the ANC is going to win, because that's nonsense. Only 13% of the people who could vote for them actually voted for them in the last election. And there's the proof of the pudding right there. All right. We've run out of time here. So Dumo, anything you want to share with the audience? And then before you finish, can you let us know when we can see Man Patriot active again? Because it was obviously something that's interested people. They've been wondering what's going on. When will we see the next Man Patriot broadcast up? And any final thoughts? The floor is yours, sir.
Right. Thanks for today, Chris. It was really awesome. With Man Patria, I'm just changing the content. So you just got to give me some time. It will be back up soon. But if you really want to read some of the stuff that I write, I mean, I write for Mises.org occasionally. So I've recently submitted a paper there, and they put it on their website. So just go to Mises.org and you'll find it. It's actually about load shedding. So you'll find it there. Not to say that, I'm affiliated with Mises in every way. They allow people to submit articles to them. So I've written a few for them. So yeah, guys, just visit Mises.org and look for my profile there, and you'll find all my articles there if you want to read more. Thanks.
Cool beans. Listen, I don't know if you saw this, but Ernst von Sale, The Conscious Curricle, recently got published in the American Conservative. He asked me to pick up a copy of the magazine for him. So he's published. That's an influential publication here on this side of the Atlantic, talking about South Africa. So you're getting published by Mises. He's getting published by the American Conservative. The only place that's published me lately was Morning Shot. I'm starting to feel like a piker here. Anyway, Dumo Denga, it's a pleasure to have you back. I'm glad to see you. I'm good to see you in good health. And it was a pleasure chatting with you again today on Kainako. We'll try to get back to something regular. Maybe next week we can get Koketsu to quit, you know, screwing off in Cairo, whatever he's up to there. I don't know. Maybe stealing Egyptian mummies. Who knows what's going on? I don't know what he's up to. Anyway, but thanks a lot. And we'll catch all of you here next time on Kainako.